upset and crying, sometimes all you have to do is take a candy and hand it to the child, and the child will immediately stop crying because the depth of the anguish is simply on the surface. It's not at all deep. And an older person, very often they're unhappy about something, so they'll just go to a movie or they'll do one thing or another just to remove the anguish. But no matter what Yudhisthira did, of course he didn't try anything frivolous or silly, but through philosophy, through knowledge, even Krishna's own words and the words of great rishis, and Yudhisthira always, as a kshatriya, as a great exalted kshatriya, listened to the rishis, to the great teachers, and accepted their words, but yet his anxiety could not be removed because Krishna did not want it removed. Because Krishna had a plan how he wanted to remove the lamentation of Yudhisthira, and that plan was fulfilled when Yudhisthira went to see Bhishma Dev, who was dying. Bhishma Dev's words did what even the words of Krishna couldn't do by Krishna's mercy. This is Krishna's pleasure, his greatest pleasure, glorifying and serving his devotees, and that is the devotee's greatest pleasure, glorifying and serving Krishna. So Yudhisthira and the Pandavas and Krishna and the rishis, so many rishis, went to see Bhishma Dev, who is lying, dying, soon to leave this world. And Bhishma Dev explained to Yudhisthira that everything that had occurred was the causeless will of Krishna. And therefore, he was not at all at fault. And Yudhisthira accepted it. Then Bhishma Dev explained that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is so dear, you are so dear to him, that he has acted as your friend in so many ways, and he is so kind and merciful to me that he has come before me to be present before my eyes at the moment of my death. Because whatever is filling our consciousness at the time of our death determines our next body. And if the all-attractive Supreme Person in full beauty with glittering garments were to come before us personally in his all-attractive feature, and if we were great lovers of Krishna, our mind, our consciousness would be full simply of Krishna, and that would guarantee our going back to Godhead. Saratad Bhava Bharata. So Krishna, Bhishma Dev said, has so kindly come and so kindly come before me at the moment of my death. And then Yudhisthira asked more questions. Yikes, what's in there? Ooh, excuse me. Yeah. I'm afraid that thorn I pulled out might have been his tail or something. Come on. Determined fellow. But caught. Caught in the webs of my dhoti. Just like the living entity is caught in the...
It's still there?
Probably. I'll probably do my dance again. Come on, where are you? There's a first for everything. Usually we save our dancing for the kirtan. Be peaceful if you're still in there. So, So Bhishma Dev then, on Yudhisthira's request, Bhishma Dev explained the duties of a king to Yudhisthira. And he explained the, more or less, the entirety of the Varnashrama system and the Varnashrama culture.
Ow!
It's that time he bit me. Okay, excuse me. Yes, I'm going out. But I'll be back. While lying on a bed of arrows. And he spoke with perfect clarity of mind. So, then, although he had been speaking about so many cultural things, spiritual cultural things, Bhishma Dev noticed that the time had come for him to leave the world. The sun had moved into the next house. It had moved into what we decided it was Makar, into Capricorn, and Uttarayan. And therefore, he withdrew his mind immediately from the material realm, even though it was a very important material realm, even though it was a realm that was set up by Krishna, the Vanashrama system set up by Krishna, Chattavana Maya Shishna Guna Karma Vavagasa, set up by Krishna. So it was spiritual in that sense, but not directly spiritual. Not directly focused on that person, Krishna. And therefore, at the time of death, Bhishma Dev wanted to focus his mind simply on Krishna. So we heard yesterday how he withdrew his mind and focused it on Krishna and his form. And I'm going to read those verses and then we'll speak. He withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who stood before him, four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined. By pure meditation, looking at Lord Sri Krishna, he at once was freed from all material and auspiciousness, and was relieved of all bodily pains caused by the arrow wounds. Thus all the external activities of his senses at once stopped, and he prayed transcendentally to the controller of all living beings while quitting his material body. Now, note what Bhishma Dev is praying for. His words begin in the next verse, and they continue for several verses. Note what he's praying for and what he does with his consciousness, because we have a concept of prayers and praying which is varied. So when a great soul like Bhishma Dev begins to pray, especially at that time of his death, that important time, we should note very clearly what he is praying for. He first says, let me now invest my thinking, feeling, and willing, which was so long engaged in different subjects and occupational duties, in the all-powerful Lord Sri Krishna. So what is he asking for at this point? For his mind to simply be focused on Krishna. He is always self-satisfied, but sometimes, being the leader of the devotees, he enjoys transcendental pleasure by descending on the material world, although from him only the material world is created. So he transcendentally comes to the material world and remains fully transcendental, not in the material world. Sri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of the tamal tree. His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems. May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruitive results. So what is he praying for in that one, in that verse? Yeah. May his his body, he says, is so attractive with its glittering effulgence and the paintings of sandalwood upon his face. His body is so attracted, and let my mind be attracted to that form and not to fruit of results. What does fruit of results mean? We use that phrase so much that it practically doesn't have any meaning for us. But what does it mean, attracted to fruit of results? Yeah, anything selfish. That I'm doing this to get something for me. That is fruit of work. So nothing for me, I just wanted to be attracted to Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is all attractive. Maybe we can make it a little lower. On the battlefield, where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna out of friendship, the flowing hair of Lord Krishna turned ashen due to the dust raised by the hoofs of the horses. So, just imagine this picture that Krishna is driving the chariot of Arjuna. And although he is decorated so nicely, his hair is flowing, and it has turned ashen color, the color of ash, due to the dust raised by the hoofs of the horses. He's battling. He's driving the chariot in a battle, protecting Arjuna, the warrior. And because of his labor, beads of sweat wetted his face. So these things are considered, they are dirt practically. But when Krishna is wearing the dust from the battlefield and beads of sweat, they are beautiful ornaments. All these decorations, Bhishma Dev says, intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows, were enjoyed by him. Let my mind thus go unto Sri Krishna. What a picture. Krishna's body is wounded. Prabhupada, of course, explains in the purport that Krishna's body can't be wounded because he is Satchidananda Vigraha. His body is composed of knowledge, eternity, and bliss. He is no different inside than outside. He has no flesh, he has no bones, he has no blood. He has no capillaries, no veins, no muscles. It's Satchidananda Vigraha. But yet he's manifesting wounds on his transcendental body. And Bhishma Dev is relishing. At the last moments of his life, he's relishing this picture. And he himself has inflicted these wounds upon Krishna. In a real sense, he has inflicted those wounds upon Krishna. But they were not given to Krishna by his bow and arrow, but they were given to Krishna by his devotion. Due to his devotion, Krishna accepted these wounds upon his own body. And Bhishma saw them as the most beautiful decorations, along with the beads of sweat. Krishna was laboring so hard. Because Bhishma's rasa, his relationship with Krishna, was based on chivalry. It was love. He was serving Krishna in a chivalrous mood. But it was love. And Krishna was reciprocating with the love of Bhishma by taking those arrows. As Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has said in his purport, like the bites of a lover. This concept of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of God, as a person who is reciprocating with the devotion of his devotees is so far beyond any concept of religion. So therefore Prabhupada very boldly said that practically no one knows anything about religion. Because without knowing about God and who He is and what His personality is and what His characteristics and qualities are, what is the question of loving Him? What is the question of religion? Rather, religion becomes a source of fruit of selfish rewards. With someone going to a church or a temple or whatever and praying, please let my desires be satisfied, my material. But that is not actually the purpose of religion at all. The purpose of religion is situated on the transcendental platform. The purpose of religion is not satisfying our desires, but with great devotion, satisfying Krishna's desires. And just see how Bhishma Dev satisfied Krishna by shooting arrows at him with devotion, but in a chivalrous mood. And Krishna was accepting those, that shooting of the arrows, accepting that pain, seeming pain. Of course, Krishna cannot experience pain. Everything is just bliss for him. But accepting that pain as if the bite of a lover. So he was so sweet. Nothing mundane at all. Although it could appear to a person who has mundane vision as something quite mundane, but there is nothing mundane in it at all. Completely transcendental. The exchange of emotions and affection was simply on the transcendental platform. Therefore, Prabhupada explained, the Lord enjoyed the wounds created by his great devotee, Bhishma Dev. And because Bhishma Dev is a devotee in the chivalrous relation, he fixes up his mind on Krishna in that wounded condition. That was the pleasure of his existence, the perfection of his existence, when he had a chance as a warrior to fight with Krishna, his most beloved object. What a picture. And Prabhupada explains in the purport another reason why Bhishma Dev appreciated this picture, because Bhishma Dev appreciated the all-merciful attitude of the Lord because he did not leave Arjuna alone, although he himself was disturbed by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev. He was so devoted, Krishna was so devoted to his position, his subservient position as the charioteer of Arjuna, and although he was shot with arrows by Bhishma, because Bhishma had made a promise that unless I'm going to kill Arjuna, unless Krishna comes forward tomorrow to fight to save Arjuna, Arjuna will be dead. So Bhishma, they fought so furiously that Krishna was forced to break his own promise to not participate in the battle, to maintain Bhishma Dev's promise that Krishna would have to break his promise and also to protect his devotee. Kanteya pratijanihi na me bhakta prashati. This is God. And this is Krishna reciprocating with his lover. How interesting it is how just in verses prior to this, Bhishma Dev has explained he is always self-satisfied, but sometimes being the leader of the devotees, although he enjoys transcendental pleasure by descending on the material world, although from him only the material world is created. So when Krishna comes to the material world, What does he do? Does he sit there on a big, big throne? What is his real pleasure? These relationships with his devotees are his pleasure. And in that relationship with the devotee, Krishna accepts the arrows that the devotee shoots as love. That means that whatever we offer Krishna with love, even arrows, Krishna accepts it. Asnami paratatmana, I will take it. Bhakti paritam, leaf of fruit, patram, pushpam, palam, toyam, yomam bhakti prayachati. Taraham bhakti paritam. And on the other hand, if we offer Krishna flowers and food and so many other things with no devotion, he has no need to accept it. He has unlimited flowers. He's the creator of flowers. He has a reservoir of flowers. He doesn't need our flowers, but he accepts the devotion to the degree that even the arrows of his devotee are accepted. This is amazing. What a picture. This is the picture, the meditation of Bhishma Dev. The next verse describes more of these battle of Kurukshetra pastimes. In the obedience to the command of his friend, Lord Krishna entered the arena of the battle of Kurukshetra. Between the soldiers of Arjuna and Duryodhana. And while he was there, he shortened the lifespan of the opposite party by his merciful glance. This is also amazing, because Krishna, the first time we actually see Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a description in the first chapter, there's a description of the battlefield and this army and that army, and then we see Arjuna is on the chariot. And the first thing he says is, Senayorubhyomadei ratam stappaya mechitam. Arjuna says, my dear Achyuta, he who does not fall down, you please drive this chariot in the midst of both the armies so I can see who I must fight and contend with in this great battle that's going to take place. So the first time we see Krishna, as in the Bhagavatam even, is when he's driving the chariot of Arjuna and serving Arjuna. So Bhishma Dev is mentioning that, and this is very wonderful. He is driving the chariot of his devotee, and at the same time, he shortened the lifespans of the opposite party by his merciful glance. This was done simply by his looking at the enemy. Let my mind be fixed upon that Krishna. Again, that is the desire. And this is of Bhishma Dev. And this is the way a devotee thinks. Mahaprabhu taught this. Nadanam nadanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani mama janamani janmanishvare bhavattat bhaktira haitikitai. That even let me take another birth or 100 other births. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said, let me even be born as an insect. But let that birth be in the house of a Vaishnava where I can hear about Krishna and thus remember him. And that remembrance of Krishna with devotion and love and affection, that is the desire of devotees like Bhishma Dev. Let me be in heaven, apitu yarte darshanam, swaga pavaga narakeshu. Let me be in hell, I don't care. What is my desire if not to be in heaven and enjoy? Because we all would rather be in heaven than... Of course, climate's better, at least. But no, the devotee doesn't care for these things. He's so absorbed in the ecstasy of his relationship with Krishna, that's all that he wants. So satisfied, it's not artificial. So again, look at what he's asking for. Prabhupada explains in his purport. By executing the order of a devotee, the Lord becomes pleased, as a father is pleased to carry out the order of his small child. This is possible only out of pure transcendental love between the Lord and his devotees. And Bhishma Dev was quite aware of this fact. Text 36. In obedience, when Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance upon observing the soldiers and commanders before him on the battlefield, the Lord eradicated his ignorance by delivering transcendental knowledge. And what does Bhishma Dev pray for? May his lotus feet always remain the object of my attraction. That means may his service be always attractive to me. And when Arjuna was in ignorance by the mercy of Krishna so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken, Krishna himself in the midst of the armies while everyone was just waiting to fight, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita and thereby removed the ignorance, the avidya of Arjuna, and established him again on the transcendental platform. And Bhishma Dev was well aware of that because he was an onlooker at this. He saw this. Krishna was instructing Arjuna in the middle of the battlefield. Prabhupada's purports here are very wonderful. The next two verses deal with another wonderful pastime, all on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Fulfilling my desire, Bhishma Dev says, and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant, even dropped his outer garment on the way. May he, Lord Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, who awards salvation, be my ultimate destination. May I go to him. On the battlefield, he charged me, as if angry because of the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows. His shield was scattered, and his body was smeared with blood due to the wounds. Prabhupada says in his purport, and we'll read just one line, the astounding feature of such dealings is that a devotee can please the Lord by playing the part of an enemy. At the moment of death, let my ultimate attraction be to Sri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. I concentrate my mind upon the chariot driver of Arjuna, who stood with a whip in his right hand and a bridle rope in his left, who was very careful to give protection to Arjuna's chariot by all means. Those who saw him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained their original forms after death. So this was very wonderful. Why don't we put on the tape? This was very wonderful, how Arjuna was there on the fighting, and Krishna was driving his chariot. Another wonderful picture. And in this is the in this picture, and as we've been speaking, the essence of the Bhagavad Gita is there.
Bhagavad Gita is addressed to by Bhimo. He may be illiterate. It doesn't matter. Still, has Chaitanya Mahaprabhu satisfied the illiterate Brahmin who was reading Bhagavad Gita in Ramana temple? Brahmin was illiterate. His guru ordered him that he read Bhagavad Gita daily, 18 chapters. So he could not refuse the order of Guru Maharaj. So he was taking the book and simply saying, so those who knew that he was illiterate, they were criticizing, while Brahmin, how you are reading Bhagavad Gita? He could not answer because he knew that I am illiterate, I do not know. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw this first and approached him. He would understand that this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has not come to criticize him, he's serious. So he informed him, sir, I am reading Bhagavad Gita, but I am illiterate. I am illiterate, but my spiritual master has ordered to read. So what can I do? I have taken this home and moving these pages, that's all. What can I do? Actually, I cannot read. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu inquired, but I see you are sometimes crying. Yes, sir, I sometimes cry. Why? That because as soon as I take this bow in my hand and I see the picture that Lord Krishna is driving the chariot of Arjuna, I cry. Krishna is so kind that he has taken the service of his devotee. He should have been seated on the chariot, Arjuna should have driven the chariot, but he is driving the chariot and Arjuna is sitting on the seat. So Krishna is so kind and beloved that he can serve his devotee. It is the duty of the devotee to serve him, but he is so kind and affectionate that he serves his devotee. So as soon as I think of this Krishna's magnanimity, I cry. Then immediately Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him. That your reading of Bhagavad Gita is perfect.
So in this, in Bhishma Dev's meditation at this point, the essence of the Bhagavad Gita is there. Because Bhishma Dev is meditating upon Krishna as Parthasarathi, the driver of the chariot of Arjuna. I concentrate my mind upon the chariot driver of Arjuna, who stood with a whip in his right hand and a bridle rope in his left, who was very careful to give protection to Arjuna's chariot by all means. Let my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna, whose motions and smiles of love attracted the damsels of Brajadham, the gopis. The damsels imitated the characteristic movements of the Lord after his disappearance from the rasa dance. So Bhishma Dev, after remembering Krishna as the charioteer of Arjuna, and remembering Krishna in a chivalrous mood, so much so that he was fighting with Krishna, Then he remembers the gopis of Vrindavan, who are the topmost of devotees. What does it mean to be the topmost of devotees? That means that their serving mood and their service was the greatest and most complete and most loving. Everything was given to Krishna, so much so that they placed Krishna completely in their debt. So Bhishma Dev is remembering the gopis for the purpose of evoking their mercy and blessings upon him, because he is now going to leave his body. So one can think that, okay, one warrior accepts Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and some cowherd village girls accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then Bhishma Dev speaks the next verse. At the Rajasuya Jagya sacrifice performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, there was the greatest assembly of all the elite men of the world, the royal and learned orders. And in that great assembly, Lord Sri Krishna was worshipped by one and all as the most exalted personality of Godhead. This happened during my presence, and I remembered the incident in order to keep my mind upon the Lord. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me, because now I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart, even in the hearts of the mental speculators. He is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. So everyone, the most elite, learned persons on the planet, plus the great devotees, are all explaining that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the absolute truth. But there he is, a person standing right before Bhishma Dev. Is it possible that this person, beautiful and attractive as he is Brahman everything, the source of the Paramatma? The Paramatma who is within and without sight of everything? Bhishma Dev's answer is yes. Tatvam yajjhyanam adhyam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavanetti sabjite. That learned persons call this absolute truth in one out of three names. Either Brahman, if they are jnanis, they call the absolute truth Paramatma. If they are yogis, or if they are bhaktis, devotees, they call the absolute truth Bhagavan. And that is Krishna. And Krishna is the ultimate realization. And that Krishna, Bhishma Dev had explained so amazingly, that absolute truth, who is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, the source of everything, has deemed it his desire to stand before me as I am dying. That absolute truth has danced with the gopis and disappeared from the arena of their dance and left the gopis mad in ecstasy for him. So much so they were imitating his pastimes, thinking themselves Krishna in their full identification and thoughts of him. And that absolute truth, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhishma is thinking, has accepted my arrows as he looked so beautifully as he was driving Arjuna's chariot, as he was creating ignorance in Arjuna for the purpose of speaking the Bhagavad Gita to liberate us all, so many future generations all over the world. Just by hearing Bhagavad Gita, get transcendental knowledge. Ignorance destroyed, death destroyed, birth destroyed, disease destroyed, old age destroyed. And that Krishna was driving the chariot of Arjuna with whip in hand and reins in hand. And Bhishma Dev was thinking himself even more fortunate than Arjuna. Why? Arjuna was having his chariot driven by Krishna, and Bhishma Dev was fighting with Arjuna and Krishna. Why was Bhishma Dev thinking himself more fortunate? Because he was able to see, as he was fighting with Krishna, he was able to see the beautiful form of Krishna right before his eyes, with his ashen hair and the beads of sweat upon his beautiful lotus face. And Arjuna, being behind Krishna and shooting arrows as Krishna was driving the chariot, did not have the facility to see that beauty of Krishna. So Bhishma Dev was thinking, how fortunate I am. If there's a tinge of envy in our heart, we only see our misfortune and how everyone else is more fortunate than us, and everyone else has things that we want. And only if I had that, then I would be better off and more Krishna conscious. And this person has this, and why is this, and why is that? But see how the devotee Bhishma Dev is thinking. We saw how Yudhisthira was thinking about the battle and how he was taking it upon himself as his fault. Such a good heart. And Bhishma Dev, a Mahajan, had a perfectly pure, transcendentally good heart, without a tinge of envy, because as long as we have envy, we will ultimately be envious of Krishna. So then Bhishma Dev focuses his consciousness on Krishna, who is in everyone's heart, and yet that Krishna is standing before him. Sutta Goswami says, thus Bhishma Dev merged himself in the Supersoul, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his mind, speech, sight and actions, fully absorbed his consciousness in thoughts of Krishna and satisfying Krishna, and thus he became silent and his breathing stopped. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The devotional service of the Lord consists of 9 principles of service activities, and they are 1. Hearing, 2. Chanting, 3. Remembering, 4. Serving the lotus feet, 5. Worshipping, 6. Praying, 7. Executing the orders, 8. Fraternizing, and 9. Fully surrendering. Any one of them or all of them are equally competent to award the desired result. But they require to be practiced persistently under the guidance of an expert devotee of the Lord. The first item, hearing, is the most important item of all. And therefore, hearing of the Bhagavad Gita and later on Srimad Bhagavatam is essential for the serious candidate who wants to attain the stage of Bhishma Dev at the end. What was the stage of Bhishma Dev at the end? His mind fixed on Krishna as he was leaving his body with great devotion. The unique situation at Bhishma Dev's time of death can be attained even though Lord Krishna may not be personally present. His words of the Bhagavad Gita or those of Srimad Bhagavatam are identical with the Lord. They are sound incarnations of the Lord, and one can fully utilize them to be entitled to attain the stage of Sri Bhishma Dev, who is one of the 8 Vasus. Every man or animal must die at a certain stage of life. But one who dies like Bhishma Dev attains perfection. And one who dies forced by the laws of nature dies like an animal. That is the difference between a man and an animal. The human form of life is especially meant for dying like Bhishma Dev. So Bhishma Dev, with his mind fully focused, his speech focused, his sight focused, and his actions focused on Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, left this world. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute, all present there became silent like birds at the end of the day. Thereafter, both men and demigods sounded drums in honor, and the honest royal order commenced demonstrations of honor and respect, and from the sky fell showers of flowers. O descendant of Bhrigu, Shonaka, after performing funeral ceremonies for the dead body of Bhishma Dev, Maharaj Yudhisthira was momentarily overtaken with grief. So there was a mixture of emotions on Yudhisthira Maharaj's part, or every great soul's, or every devotee's part when such a great soul as Bhishma Dev leaves this world. Why? Because on one hand, he has gone back to Godhead. So clearly, Bhishma Dev went back to Godhead, his consciousness fully focused on Krishna. So in that case, there is no cause, certainly, for any lamentation or grief. But yet, Yudhisthira Maharaj felt grief, because that person who had protected him, who had given him so much from his very childhood, he was no longer present on this planet. Because when Yudhisthira Maharaj was young, practically speaking, he was being hunted by Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra, and they tried to kill him and his brothers. There was such conspiracies. But Bhishma Dev, Prabhupada explains, was always a sincerely sympathetic well-wisher, grandfather, friend, and philosopher to Maharaj Yudhisthira, even up to the last moment of his life. It was Bhishma Dev who cleared away the lamentation from his heart. So from his earliest memories, it was Bhishma Dev who cared for him. To the moments before he died, it was Bhishma Dev. And now that great soul was no longer present. He died very happily by seeing Maharaj Yudhisthira to the throne. Otherwise, he would have long ago quitted his material body instead of suffering agony over the undue sufferings of the Pandavas. He was simply waiting for the opportune moment, because he was sure and certain that the sons of Pandu would come out victorious on the battle of Kurukshetra, as his lordship Sri Krishna was their protector. As a devotee of the Lord, he knew, Bhishma Dev knew, that the Lord's devotee cannot be vanquished at any time. Maharaj Yudhisthira was quite aware of all these good wishes of Bhishma Dev, and therefore he must have been feeling the great separation. He was sorry for the separation of a great soul, and not for the material body which Bhishma Dev relinquished. All the great sages then glorified Lord Sri Krishna, who was present there, by confidential Vedic hymns. So they were all chanting prayers and Vedic mantras. And the ultimate purpose of these Vedic prayers and mantras, as Krishna himself explains in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Vedis chasavar aham, I am to be known, eva vidyo, certainly I am to be known. So by reciting these prayers, the rishis were glorifying Krishna. Then all of them returned to their respective hermitages, bearing always Lord Krishna within their hearts. Thereafter, Maharaj Yudhisthira at once went to his capital, Hastinapur, accompanied by Lord Sri Krishna. And there, Maharaj Yudhisthira consoled his uncle in Angandhari, who was an ascetic. So Yudhisthira was so kind, it was practically because of Dhritarashtra that the whole fratricidal war took place. And yet, he only saw that Dhritarashtra must be in so much grief now because his sons have died, and now Bhishma Dev, his close confederate, like his father, his uncle, now had died, so I must go there and console him. And after this, the great religious king, Maharaj Yudhisthira, executed the royal power in the kingdom strictly according to the codes and royal principles approved by his uncle, Bhishma Dev, and confirmed by Lord Sri Krishna. Excuse me, approved by his uncle, Dhritarashtra. So he did. Yudhisthira followed. Exactly. He showed his respect to Bhishma Dev by following his instructions. And ruled, did his duty and ruled. He gave up his lamentation and ruled. Sri Bhishma Dev ki jai. Yudhisthira Maharaj ki jai. Sri Krishna ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Any questions or comments? Yes.
When Krishna says praise to Krishna before his instruction on Varnashram, he's praying to my Lord as Chaturbhuja Bhuvana Narayan. So it's clear that his worshipful Lord is.
Yeah, Prabhupada explains that in the purport too, that he's a worshipper of. Yeah.
So how do we understand that? At that time, was it because of the context that he was praying? Did he say like that?
But I can't follow.
How do we understand that he offers his prayer to Mohammed Narayan at that point?
But he also knew his mind was free from all duality, so he knew that this Krishna, he saw four Om Narayan in Krishna. Yeah. Because everything depends on one's bhava, or one's mood and one's love. So he saw Krishna in that way. But his ultimate worshipable deity was...
Krishna was standing before him, it had been written, and he was looking at him. And he was not seeing two-handed Krishna, but four-handed Narayan even at that time, face to face also.
Is that, that's explained? I thought so.
So is it Krishna was there with four hands?
Obviously Krishna was only having two hands, but to him it appeared that it was four hands.
That's what I can ask you, was it that everybody saw him?
I can't say.
Yes. He withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, who stood before him four-handed, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shined.
Hmm.
Did everybody see Krishna with four hands? Was that his only his sentiment? Was that only his imagination of it?
Only his.
Was it only in Vishnu Dev's heart, or was that a manifest form that only Vishnu Dev could see?
Or was everyone seeing it? Yeah, it's one of those three. But it doesn't say that everyone didn't see him with four hands either.
By implication.
Yeah. Well, the four-hand, two-hand question is a very complicated question, which I'm not qualified to speak much on. But we can say Jisvedam Manusham Rupam Tava Somyam Cha Arjuna, that Arjuna on the battlefield saw Krishna in his Jisvedam Manusham Rupam. He saw him in his human form, human like form, so that means two arms. So whether he manifested four arms just for Bhishma Dev, or just for Bhishma Dev and no one else, or just for Bhishma Dev and everyone else, I can't say. Yes?
Also, I was wondering, because you were saying about how his worshipful deity was Narayan, but it says that Bhishma Dev was a pure devotee, and as a military marshal, He constantly remembered the battlefield feature of the Lord as Parthasarathi, chariot driver of Arjuna. Therefore, the Lord's pastime as Parthasarathi is also eternal. And in such pastimes, his associates like the Pandavas and Bhishma Dev are his constant eternal companions. So Bhishma Dev never forgot the beautiful picture of the Lord as Parthasarathi, which even Arjuna could not see. But it sounds like his worshipful deity is Parthasarathi. Krishna in the form of Parthasarathi.
Oh, it actually says that he entered the spiritual realm in one of the Vaikuntha planets with the Lord in his eternal form of Parthasarathi predominance. Over here.
So it doesn't seem like there's any contradiction in that. And there he has four arms. It's a Vaikuntha type of planet. Any other questions?
Krishna was born in prison because his form when he appeared in prison.
First he showed a forearm form. Yes. Because if he showed only a two-arm form, no one wouldn't know that he was the Supreme Lord. So first, even though he was born with a two-arm form, he showed first a forearm form. And then Vasudeva said, please, you make it retract two arms. Any other questions or comments? Okay, on Wednesday.